is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Coach Corey Harris from the Beijing Royal Fighters CBA team, and you're listening to the Hoop Heads podcast. Let's get into it.
Hey, Hoop Heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoop Heads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoop Heads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. 11:37 p.m. Tuesday night. Tip, we made it before Wednesday.
Well, listen, school's back, so we're going to try to be at least somewhat conscientious and make sure we start at a decent hour, right, Mike?
Yeah, 11:30 is a little bit better than 1:30 to tip off a podcast. Not so much the podcast itself, but the post-editing process. I don't look forward to staying up till 3 a.m. to get that done. So I'm much happier to stay up till 1:15 to get it done. So 11:30 is a much better tip-off time for sure. Yeah,
for sure. Did you want to do any housekeeping, Mike, before we start the podcast?
Sure, we can do some housekeeping. We launched today. Well, actually, we didn't launch it today because we already had the introductory episodes out. But we launched the first episode today of Bleachers and Boards with Matt Collier, who's the head coach at Queens College in New York City, and Marlon Guild, who is an assistant at Division I Rider. And those two guys have Bleachers and Boards, which is going to be a great podcast. They're going to talk hoops. They're going to talk hip-hop. They're going to argue back and forth. I think their show is going to be very, very entertaining. So if you get a chance to check that out, make sure you do so. And sort of apropos tonight, although with the Jazz going out, we are going to bring on our next NBA pod is going to be a Utah Jazz podcast, Jazzology, with Calvin Johnson,
and they're going to be singing the blues in the first episode.
It's going to look rough. It's going to look rough. Calvin's going to have a rough first episode, I think, trying to rehash this whole thing.
Come on, singing the blues. That was pretty good, wasn't it?
I understand. That was pretty good. That wasn't bad.
Suggest that for an episode title for him.
Singing the blues?
Yeah.
Episode one, singing the blues. All right, I'll throw it out there to Calvin. But that should be coming, I would think, sometime probably in the next week, which will bring us up to 4 NBA team pods with Cavaliers Central, Grizz and Grind, Nuck If You Buck, and now Jazzology. So we're on our way, and hopefully we're going to continue to add more quality podcasters and great hosts like we already have. And if you're looking for great NBA content, this is the place you want to come, to the Hoop Heads Podcast Network. And Jason and I will continue to do our best to kind of cover the league as a whole, with maybe a little bit of biased spin occasionally towards the Cavs. But all right, all that being said, let's jump into very quickly. Let's just talk some social justice before we get into tonight's games. We were planning to possibly go on and have an episode over the weekend, and just with things that went on with our own personal situations and family and bedtimes and everything else, it just didn't happen. So let's just weigh in briefly on the social justice piece. I'll start just by saying that one of the things that we talked about prior to heading into the bubble, when the discussion was, is the platform more valuable, or is it more valuable for these guys to remain out in the community? And what I talked about back at that time was, what is it that we can really have? What can we do? What can the players accomplish? And I think with this strike, as small as it was, as short as it was, I think the fact that it was off the cuff and not pre-planned allowed it to have a much bigger impact, because people didn't have time to sort of go through and figure out, well, what's going to be our reaction to it and how are we going to handle it? It was just everybody kind of had to handle it in the moment. And so I think the fact that we came out of it with some real solid things that the players were able to make happen, with the arenas around the league being used as voting places for our upcoming election in November, for the social justice initiative that the owners were going to start to contribute to a fund to be able to further the causes of Black Lives Matter and other groups that are trying to end some of the situations that we have here with police brutality and the other issues that are facing our country. And then the last thing was just the more branding, more messaging during games to make sure that that stayed at the forefront, because obviously as the basketball has gotten better, I think the players were worried that the messaging was getting lost. So the fact that they were able to accomplish three major things that are actual things that can have an impact, to me, that says that that particular move by the NBA players was a success. And yet, again, we have to still address the fact that here you had Jacob Blake, who shot in the back seven times. The players, I think this is where they felt sort of powerless, that they were in the bubble. They were trying to get their message out. They had already dealt with all these things that led into the protest from George Floyd, and they kind of felt like they had been backed into a corner and they weren't having the kind of impact that they hoped, because here was another similar situation. And so it was powerful to see, and I hope that what we start to begin to look at around the country is that there's going to be some real reform. There's going to be some things that are going to actually make a difference. And I think that the NBA players and the NBA are going to have a part in it. I don't know if it's a small part. I don't know if it's a large part. I don't know where they fall on the continuum, but I do know they're playing a part in what is hopefully going to be some changes in the way that our country conducts its business.
Yeah, just a few points on that. I think the thing that really tipped it over the edge was the video of the alleged shooter during the riots. I think that's really what kind of put this over the edge for the NBA players, because you know, we're not going to get into the whole politics of the whole thing, but a white guy walking with a AK-47 down the street shooting a guy, and the police don't even bat an eye, but an African-American man goes to the cars, whatever the situation would be, there was no reason for that man to be shot seven times. I just can't see it. So I think, you know, I think that was really the point that really threw this over the edge for the players. And to your point about the messaging being lost, I think obviously, you know, one of the big things that I didn't even realize, like I had seen the ball boys wearing the Black Lives Matter shirts at did you hear this, Mike? Like, they'd stopped wearing the Black Lives Matter shirts after like the seeding games, the ball boys.
Okay. I didn't hear that.
And some of the players had noticed it. And they didn't really think anything of it. But when the discussion with the NBA players were like, is the messaging going away? Notice on Saturday night, all the ball boys once again had Black Lives Matter shirts on. So I think that really, you know, what is a shirt going to do? I don't know. But at least the branding and the messaging is there. And I think it's important that about the voting centers things is really, really important. And I like that they're doing. I just wish, you know, the way it was being reported that all the NBA teams are having their stadiums used for voting, when that's not actually the case. It has to be, it's a stadium that's owned by the team. Was that correct, Mike?
So like, that was my understanding of it. So I don't think it's been, I still think that they'll probably try to make it happen, but certainly when the arena is not in control of the team owners and it's controlled by the municipality or some other group, it's
and I didn't hear. I don't think the Q's currently included in that. Correct.
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that, Jay.
I don't think it is. I mean, I think when they've been reporting these things, they've been focusing on like Staples Center is going to be used. I'm pretty sure the 76ers stadium is being used. I know Atlanta stadium is being used. So it's good. I think it's really good, and I hope that so they can figure a way to get all the stadiums involved. On a quick side note, you know, when this whole thing was coming out, the Cleveland teams announced that they were going to form a coalition. Did you see that press release?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. That was going to be my next point.
So the Cleveland teams said they were going to form a press release and in the form a coalition. And in the press release, it said the Cavaliers, the Browns, and the Indians are going to form a coalition to fight racial injustice. And
right.
We don't need to get into a discussion about the Indians and whether that's a appropriate name or not, but I just kind of found it slightly, humorous that they're fighting for racial injustice in people. And I want to be clear here in saying, I understand people's frustration with losing the name the Indians, but I also respect people's opinions on that, and I'm guilty as many as I still have Chief Wahoo shirts, just because it's something I grew up with, and if they decide that they're going away from it, I will accept it. I will not boycott the Indians. I will not boycott whatever the Spiders or wherever they become. But I will remember the good times. It's just the same thing as, Jacobs Field. It's still Jacobs Field to me. I don't call it Progressive Field, but it's a baseball team. Like, I don't, the name doesn't matter to me, but all right, yeah, Mike, I'll go on that point.
All right. Last thing is just on the Cleveland sports teams kind of coming together. I think that goes back to my original point that hopefully whatever they're able to do, and I have no idea what the agenda is going to be or how they're going to go about handling that and what their targeted issues are going to be, but certainly just the fact that they're thinking about what they can do and how they can have an impact collectively, that matters. And hopefully they're just like the NBA players. Hopefully they're going to be able to get something done that is actionable, that is more than just the six general managers and coaches meeting in a room somewhere to talk about it, but they're actually going to be some meaningful change and some things are going to take place that those groups who obviously are very influential within a community, that they're going to be able to have an impact. And I think that's ultimately what the NBA players wanted to do, was to have an impact. And it seems like they are. And I think they're going to have to continue to press the issue, because we all know that just like anything else in life, that the longer something goes on, the more you just kind of get used to it and it's easier for it to slide away. So it has to kind of be kept front of mind all the time. And I think the players are going to continue to do that, because obviously it's an important cause for them. And it's an important moment in our country to be able to hopefully turn the corner here and start to bring people back together instead of keeping people apart and keeping people divided. And I think we should leave it there and let's move on and talk.
I've got a perfect segue, Mike.
Go for it.
So, we're going to talk about the Jazz Nuggets game tonight for sure. But in this press conference after the game, did you see the quote, Spider-Man, from Donovan Mitchell?
No, I did not.
Okay. I will. There will be one profanity in this tweet or comment, so here we go. People lost their family members to police brutality and racism and shit. The way that I'm feeling right now is nothing compared to that. So, you're thinking about a guy who just lost Game 7 of an NBA series, and that's the first thing that he thinks to say coming out of his mouth. So, once again, that goes back to our point, is I think the players are going to make sure that it remains at the forefront. I don't know how I would react to losing a Game 7. I'd be pretty upset. I don't necessarily know that would be the first thing that come to mind. So I applaud him for coming out and saying that right out the gate. And, I think that's pretty powerful, right? Like him doing that right after losing a very important game to him, obviously, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that it's not something that you probably would have seen happen a year ago, 2 years ago, 20 years ago. It just wasn't something that would be accepted. It wasn't something that a player probably would be thinking. But for him to say that, it just points out again, like we said off the top, how important this issue is and how important it is that we start to figure it out. And it's not going to change overnight, but we all need to keep working and pushing and trying to get our elected officials to make decisions that, again, try to bring us together instead of try to split us apart. And that, to me, is the most important piece of this.
Yep. All right, so the game itself. First of all, I guess we should talk series. I think this is going to go down as one of the greatest series that people in 5 years are going to completely forget about, Mike. Here's why.
Well, I think it's a first round series one.
Yeah. I think if you put Donovan Mitchell and someone made this point, so I don't want to take credit. I don't remember who I saw it. If you put Donovan Mitchell and you put him in the Celtics uniform and you put Jamal Murray in a Laker uniform, this is all of a sudden is an all time classic. True or false?
I mean, yes and no. I think obviously the uniforms play a factor in it for sure. Utah and Denver clearly aren't two of the marquee franchises in the league, and clearly the Lakers and Celtics would be. But I do think also part of it goes to who Murray and Mitchell were slash are, in that neither one of them is a top tier star. Mitchell is a, I guess he's an all-star level player. I don't think he's necessarily been considered an all-NBA level player. And Murray, I don't think he's made an all-star game. So he going into it, now people know that he's had these hot streaks before, nothing like what he did in this series. But he's kind of been a player who's been up and down. I think his career shooting percentage from three is like 34%. So it's not like these two guys are, I'm just going back to the one game that this kind of reminded me of, is the Larry Bird, Dominique Wilkins duel in game seven in the Eastern Conference. I think it was the semifinals back in 88 maybe. And that was just two guys going back and forth. And that's what a lot of these games were between Mitchell and Murray. But I don't think that at this point in their career, either one of those guys is as accomplished as Bird and Dominique were at that moment. And so it doesn't necessarily take on that legendary status unless these two guys continue to ascend into superstardom. Now, maybe they will, and based on the way that they each played, there certainly is the possibility. But, you know, Murray tonight was very pedestrian. So he had three games in this series that he was just, And then he had four games where he was transcendent. And that's kind of been his pattern throughout his career. Now, going for 50 multiple times in a series and averaging over 30 like he did in this series, he hasn't done that before, but he still was a little bit inconsistent. To me, I think if I look at which guy I think is going to continue to ascend or has a higher ceiling, I still think Mitchell is the better long-term bet to be a consistent NBA All-Star. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. I think what's holding Mitchell back is he doesn't have a Jokic more than anything, right? Would you agree with that? Like he has a defensive player in Gobert, and I want to be clear here. Gobert was fantastic in the fourth quarter.
He was really good.
He was the only thing keeping them in that game. He had 10 points and 12 rebounds in the fourth quarter, Mike. Like, I know a lot of those rebounds were on those misses tips that he kept missing. Like, he had multiple opportunities to score. But let's be honest, if it wasn't for Gobert, Utah would have been sunk in that game tonight.
Yeah, offensively, they had nothing really going. And
Joe Ingles looked like he was playing hot potato. It was like the ball was the coronavirus, and he just kept passing it as soon as he got it. He did not want to catch it.
That's kind of how he plays, though. I mean, he does keep the ball moving. I wasn't that worried, honestly, about watching Ingles. It was just, it kind of harkened back to last year's Utah or 2 years ago Utah, where it's just Mitchell trying to create something out of nothing. And he's better, and he was able to do it to a much higher degree of success in this series than he was the past two postseasons. But it still came down to they needed something more. And Conley, I mean, I know he missed the last shot, and that's, it's a make or miss situation. If it goes in, he's a hero. If he misses it, he's the GOAT. And you can't argue with either the shot goes in or it doesn't. But during the fourth quarter, I thought Conley tried to do some things and at least get in there, but he shot 2 for 13 from the game. So he didn't really help out a whole lot. And yeah, Gobert was really good offensively. But then at the other end, Jokic just carried the Nuggets in the fourth quarter and hit a ton of big shots, jump shots, took it inside, took it right to Gobert. And so those two guys kind of went at each other in the fourth quarter. It was weird to see. I know we talked about with Philly the fact that I don't know if I'd want to build my team around a center. And I mean, Jokic is just, that guy's just so good offensively. Like, you watch him and he's got really good footwork. His jump shot, he kind of shoots it sort of like Dirk, kind of like behind his head, and he's got it up high. So you're not blocking that shot, and he shoots it really well. And we talked about it going into last year's playoffs. Like, I didn't know if he was a guy who in the fourth quarter of big games, you could give him the ball and he could take over and get you a basket. And he proved it last year, and he proved it again tonight that he was their guy in the fourth quarter. Murray, I thought, took some really bad shots trying to force things. Now, you can say that earlier in the series he was forcing up those same shots and they were going in. But when they don't go in, it looks bad. Whereas Jokic was just in control of his game the whole time, going and getting to his spots, doing the things that he wanted to do, shooting the little jumper, driving in with the multiple pump fakes and pivots inside, and then scoring over Gobert, who's two-time defensive player of the year. So I came away again just super impressed with
what did you think Jokic of Gobert's Euro step, Mike?
Yeah, that was sweet. I mean, it wasn't quite as beautiful as the couple that Donovan Mitchell had, where he's like going out 3 feet one direction and planting his foot and going the other way. The amount of torque that he was putting on his knees on some of those steps was absolutely crazy. But he was creating so much space. But yeah, Gobert's was like, it looked like, you know, the uncoordinated, like 13-year-old who's just growing into their body trying to do that. But hey, he pulled it off. Good for him.
Do you think that these two are going to be on the same roster next year? Will one of them be gone with all the stuff that happened? Do you think?
No, I think they bring the two of them back. Okay. I mean, those are their two best guys. I mean, you're not trading Mitchell. So you're basically saying, are you going to get rid of Gobert?
And it's hard to get rid of a guy who's the second best defender in the league, right?
The league is moving away from the Rudy Gobert style of player. But yet, if you got a guy who's going to give you 19 points and 18 rebounds in a game seven, I don't think that that's a guy you're in a hurry to get rid of. And I'm not sure what's the value of Rudy Gobert around the league. Like, what if you really shopped him, what could you get back and what would you want that would significantly improve your team? And don't forget, they didn't have Bogdanovich in this series. If Bogdanovich is here, that's one more guy that can score. It's kind of what they were missing, is one more guy who could do some stuff offensively, and Bogdanovich would have been that guy.
Yep. And Conley didn't play great tonight.
No,
so.
Conley didn't play well. And I just don't know. If you shop Gobert, I don't know what you get for him. I don't know what's out there. I don't think he's not bringing you back an all NBA level player at another position, I don't think.
Okay. I'm not saying I'm advocating this trade, okay? I want to be clear here. Do you think you Gobert for Andre Drummond, would that be a good swap or would that be a bad swap?
For who?
I'm saying Gobert for Andre Drummond.
No, you don't want Andre Drummond if you're Utah. He doesn't make you better.
Okay.
I think if they're the Cavs.
I'm saying, is Andre Drummond as good of a player in this league that you could get for Gobert? Like, are you going to get something better for him that's going to make your team?
Well, I think you wouldn't probably trade positionally if you were trading Gobert. You'd try to get somebody on the wing or somebody in the backcourt that could help you to score. You'd probably want to get
So who would be the best player that you think they could get? Mike, I know I'm off the top of your head. Is there anyone?
I don't have any. I'm just trying to think of the type of player that you could get. Like, could you get Eric Gordon as an example, a guy who's like the third best player maybe on a good team who scores, who can maybe play a little bit of defense.
A good team, Mike? Oh no,
who's not?
Oh no, wait. Did you say Eric Gordon's on a good team?
Well, they're a good team. We'll get to that. Don't worry. But you know what I'm saying. I'm just trying to think of guys. I know you are, but I'm just trying to think of guys that are in the mold of a player who's probably not an all-star, but who's a good quality starter who can do some things. I don't know that you could get an all-star wing back for Rudy Gobert just based on the way the league is.
Okay. I mean, I agree with you. I just wanted to pick your brain and think you could get anyone. I don't think they could. I'm interested to see what happens with Utah. Did you see the tweet I shared with you? Quinn Snyder looks like the Joker before he got dropped in a vat of acid. I thought that was a pretty good one. I like Quinn Snyder, by the way. I want to be clear there, but
he's a good coach, I think.
Yeah, he's a good coach. All right, so the other game.
Wait. We got to go over the last sequence.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just the boneheadedness of the whole entire last four plays. So starts with Utah almost not being able to inbound the ball. And then
calling a timeout immediately.
Getting into Royce O'Neal and having to blow their last timeout, which I guess really and ultimately didn't matter the way the game played itself out. But still,
well, I think it mattered, Mike. I think it mattered because if they would have caught, if, like, hypothetically speaking, if they got that rebound, they could have called a timeout after the blown layup, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right there. Yeah, they could have. Are you allowed to advance the ball in that case?
Yes, because if as long as whoever you catches the ball doesn't dribble the ball or with dribble the ball, then yes, right. You get to advance the ball. So,
but here's the other thing. I would counter that and say, if I was Quinn Snyder and I had a timeout in that situation, when Torrey Craig blows that layup, and I went back and I looked at it a couple times because I was curious just to see like what Denver's players were doing, because obviously what you watch there when that shot's missed, you just watch the ball. And so I was curious to see what are Denver's guys doing, because clearly as they're running down, it's a 4-on-1 and they don't expect that layup to be missed. And when it's missed, they actually do run back. I mean, it's kind of all scrambled. But I guess if I was in that situation and I was Quinn Snyder, ball goes to Conley, I think I let it play out exactly the same way that it played out. I don't think you call a timeout and try to go against a set defense. I think the shock of them missing the layup, where they basically that layup goes in, you know, they could just stand there. And I think that's what the mode they were in. It took them all a split second to kind of snap out of that. And by the time that happened, Conley was up the left side. Mitchell was standing over on the right wing. Could have thrown a pass over there. I wouldn't have thrown it if I was Conley either, just because Conley was able to get to a spot where he could get a good shot. But it was just, I don't think I would have called timeout in there. Case, I guess, is my point.
Okay, I was just saying that they hypothetically could have, though. And then
the dumbest part of that was Jamal Murray. I mean, that's the dumb. I mean, obviously, Torrey Craig missing the layup is not really what you wanted to have.
Pull it out, man.
But pull it out, like just bring the ball back out and get fouled. Like, there's no sense in. I know it's a 4-on-1, but and you don't expect. I mean, NBA players shoot 99% on that particular layup.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine if they would have lost that game on that Conley three? I think Bew would have literally gone to the top of a mountain in Denver and jumped off of it. Like,
well, Torrey Craig immediately goes up onto the, and again, it's mitigated by the fact that this was a first round series, but he goes up onto the Mount Rushmore of boneheaded plays.
Ernest Biner
to end a game. Well, I'm thinking of basketball. I guess when I think of the two most boneheaded plays, I think of Freddie. You probably won't even remember these, but Fred Brown throwing the ball to James Worthy in the Michael Jordan shot game in the NCAA tournament championship. And then I think of Chris Webber calling the timeout. Those to me are the two.
Well, I know that one. I bring it up.
I know you know that. I know you know that one.
But I'm just saying, here's my bonehead play. Are you ready for mine? Ricky Davis attempting to get a triple-double by throwing it off his own backboard. That's a pretty good one.
Or JR calling timeout.
Yep, that's another one.
So, I mean, Torrey Craig, much bigger stakes in all those other games that I mentioned. So, in a first-round series.
Not the game that I mentioned.
No, probably not. But Torrey Craig, definitely off the hook, let's put it that way. Would not have been a pleasant offseason for him from a mental standpoint to have missed that layup if that Conley three goes down. Would have been a rough one for Torrey Craig.
All right. So I guess the next step would be for us to discuss their upcoming matchup with the Clippers, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. The Clippers obviously closed down the Mavs, even though Marcus Morris is a punk. That guy should be suspended for a game. That's my opinion. It's not going to happen, but he should be suspended for a game. That was a punk move, Marcus Morris.
When you have that on top of him stomping his ankle the game before, I think there was
an accident.
There's a pretty good set of circumstances that, first of all, I don't know that I've ever done that in my entire basketball career, stomp on a guy's ankle like that accidentally. So the odds of that happening when you run all the way across the floor to guard a guy who there's nobody else around him, very, very dubious at best. Let's put it that way.
So Kristaps having his torn MCL, I think that pretty much sealed the fate for the Mavs, sadly. I was holding out hope they'd at least push it to Game 7, but that didn't happen. I mean, the Clippers are a good team. What else can I say? I'm not a big fan of the Clippers. I prefer them to the Rockets for sure. But I think the Clippers are going to easily win this series because they've been sitting on eating bonbons the last few days. The Nuggets were clearly, I mean, you could see it on both teams. The Jazz and the Nuggets are both exhausted. They're gassed.
Yeah.
So now you've got arrested Kawhi. You've got arrested Paul George. You've got, you know, Beverly should probably be back now, I would guess. And I just don't see any way that the Nuggets win this series. Sorry, Bew. I just don't. I'm taking the Clippers in five, Mike.
I think that's fair. I'm going to give the Nuggets one more game. I'm going to say Clippers in six. Kawhi was fantastic against the Mavs. And that guy can get any shot he wants at any time. And his mid-range jumper, his three, it honestly looks like a robot is shooting the ball. Like, it's just, it looks exactly the same every single time. He's got, I'd say for a good shooter, his arc is pretty low on his shot. And almost every single time, it just bangs the back of the rim and then falls straight down on his shot. And he's so strong, he gets to whatever spot he wants, and then he just bumps the guy off and scores. And so as good as Luka was and as much of a revelation as he was in that series, Kawhi was every bit as good as Luka was. Maybe he wasn't as scintillating in a particular moment as Luka was, but consistency-wise and just banging out 30-point games and banging out wins, Kawhi, man, I don't know. He was the best player in the playoffs last year once Durant went down. And I'm not so sure that as the playoffs continue that he's not going to be the best guy in the playoffs this year, as much as that pains me to say that. I think the rest of the Clippers, I'm still not 100% sure that I can count on them. I don't know that I want to go into any series with Paul George as my second best player. But I think they're better than the Nuggets. Jamal Murray's going to have a crazy series, and Jokic is going to have to – he's going to have to dominate Zubats, who's been playing well for the Clippers. So I don't know that – I think Jokic clearly wins that matchup, but I don't know that Jokic dominates that matchup, which is what he would have to do in order for Denver to have any chance. I just don't think defensively – I don't think Denver can stay with the Clippers. And conversely, I think the Clippers' defense will be able to throw some more different things at Jamal Murray than what the Utah Jazz was able to throw at him. You look at if they throw – Kawhi on him, or they throw Paul George on him, or they throw Patrick Beverley on him if Beverley ends up coming back at some point in the series. Just like they had lots of guys to throw at Luka, the only difference is Luka's 4 or 5 inches taller and 30 or 40 pounds heavier than Jamal Murray and is a way, way better passer. So it's going to be tough. I mean, if Murray comes through and averages 30 a game in that series, then maybe they have a chance, but I don't see that happening. I say Clippers in six.
Yep. All right, so we'll do the other Western Conference game that still has to happen before we know who the Lakers are going to play. This is my going to be my favorite segment of the night because we're going to talk about the Thunder and the Houston Rockets. And normally
I've been waiting all day.
I'm not that excited to talk about the Rockets very often, but after, you know, I'll be completely honest, completely transparent. I did not watch the fourth quarter of the game last night. I did not watch most of the third quarter. I went to bed thinking there's no way that the Rockets were going to lose the game. They were up 10 or 11 when I went to bed, and it just the whole momentum of the game felt like it was a very Rockets-y game. And little did I know that it was going to turn even to more of the Rockets-y playoff game in the fourth quarter. And if the game's close tomorrow, if the game's set like this tomorrow night, Mike, I think I'm going to be going to bed not paying attention to the fourth quarter of that game so that I cannot jinx the chances of the Thunder to win. So I'm thrilled. Chris Paul put on a show. I watched the highlights this morning. It was really nice to see. I think a lot of times, you know, I don't know, Mike. I've talked about Carmelo not ever getting his due, but is Chris Paul, like, I know a lot of people regard him as one of the best point guards ever, but the fact that Chris Paul has never won, is he the Charles Barkley of this generation? Like, he's going to go down as one of the greatest players, but if he doesn't win a ring, he's not necessarily going to be as remembered.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? Right? Would you put him in the same echelon, right, as Charles Barkley?
I don't think there's any question that he falls into that group of guys that if you added one or two NBA titles to their resume, they shoot up the leaderboard in terms of the all-time greatest players. So you're looking at Barkley, you're looking at Karl Malone, you're looking at Chris Paul, you're looking at Dominique Wilkins, these guys who, John Stockton, guys who had tremendous, tremendous careers, but never were able to break through, and Patrick Ewing, never able to win a title. If you put an NBA title in their prime where they are the best player on a championship team on their resume, those guys are all thought of, they're all thought of in a different light for sure. And Chris Paul certainly falls into that. He's had a couple moments, a couple hiccups in big moments where he hasn't come through. But for the most part, over the course of his career, it's hard to argue with what Chris Paul has done. And I don't think that his teams, generally speaking, have performed up to their capabilities. Now, the Clippers, you can make a case for when they had Blake and DeAndre and it's Lob City that maybe they underperformed, and clearly they should have never lost that series to the Rockets when Harden was sitting on the bench, which we're almost there. But I think Chris Paul goes to another level if he puts a title on his resume. But at this point, I don't know that he's not going to lead this team to a championship. And if you were to get a championship at this point in his career, I think at best you could hope that he could be the second best player on a championship team. He's no longer playing at the level, or I don't think he can play at the level over the course of four playoff series to be the best.
Is he the best player on the Thunder, Mike?
Oh, yeah, he's the best player on the Thunder. Okay. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah, I don't think there's any question
about
that.
I agree with that. Okay, the floor is yours, Mike. I'm going to time you. You got 2 minutes. James Harden.
Okay, I'm going to start out with this statement right here, and that is that if you bet on James Harden and the Rockets to win tomorrow night's Game 7, you might be the biggest idiot around anywhere.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you right now, there is no possible way that Houston is winning that Game 7 tomorrow. They're just not. You can give me every reason why you think they're going to. You can tell me how great they're going to shoot. You can tell me this. You can tell me that. I'm just telling you that it's not happening. The Rockets are not going to win Game 7. Harden is not going to come through in that big game, in that big moment. You look at the game, at the end of the game last night, two huge possessions where Harden brings the ball down the floor, I don't know, 98% of the possessions for the Houston Rockets over the course of the season. I don't know what his time of possession is versus the other Rockets. I could probably look that up. But whatever it is, I'm sure it's the most staggering difference between him and any teammate in the entire league. And on the two biggest possessions in an opportunity to close out Chris Paul, his former teammate, Harden doesn't have the ball. Westbrook brings the ball up. Harden never touches it. Westbrook shoots an air ball in one possession. Credit to Harden. He hustled and saved the ball and threw it off Gallinari and saved them a possession. And then the next possession, when they're coming down with, like, I don't know, it was 40 seconds to go, maybe Russ drives in and chucks it out of bounds trying to get it to Covington while Harden is back just kind of jogging down the floor and, tried to set a screen for Westbrook, but it wasn't a very effective screen, and then just kind of backed up out of the play. And you got to want the ball. Like, there's too much history here of this guy not coming through when it counts. There just is. And I've said it. I've been on this train for, I don't know, since we started the podcast. I don't believe in James Harden as a championship player. I don't believe in him as a guy who can help your team win an NBA title, because when he has the ball, everybody else just stands
around.
There's
your 2 minutes, Mike. So I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm just messing with you.
But he stands around. When he has the ball, everybody else just stands around and waits for him to finish doing whatever he's going to do and kick the ball to them. And then when he doesn't have the ball, I mean, it's glaring. He just stands there. He gives the ball up and then he just, I mean, he stands. He doesn't really even move. And so I just don't think, you can play winning basketball with one guy. Anybody who's ever played basketball on the playground or on a team, he's the guy that you absolutely just don't want to play with. Like, there's nothing wrong with having a guy who's the best player wanting to have the ball and do things and whatever. But when that guy doesn't do anything besides just stand around and dribble the ball and take crazy shots, I don't know. I don't see it. So put all your money on the Oklahoma City Thunder for tomorrow night, game 7. Thunder is going to advance. I don't see it. Harden, it's not gonna happen, Rockets fans.
And Mike, I would recommend not putting that as the tag, you know, the headliner quote, because if it happens, then no one's gonna listen to the episode about you predicting the Rockets. There's no way they're gonna win Game 7.
Well, they're gonna listen to it because they're gonna listen to it prior to the game.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Right. So
here's my thinking, Mike.
We'll give them some clickbait.
I want the Thunder to win. I think they're just. The Rockets are just gonna do. They're gonna somehow pull it out tomorrow, so that we are torturous and having to watch them play more basketball this season.
It's not gonna happen. Look, they take so many horrendous shots. Now, again, could they get hot? I mean, it's the whole theory of the way that they play is that there's a huge variance in whether or not their threes go in. But they take so many bad shots, and their best player just is not clutch. I'm sorry. He's just not. And
okay.
There's a history of it, and they're not winning. I'm telling you now, they are not winning.
Okay. All right. I hope you're right. I have a very bad feeling you're wrong, but I hope you're right. Okay. We're going to really quickly, Mike, because we're already at the 41-minute mark. We're going to really quickly talk about the two Eastern Conference series. Do you want to do rapid fire talk about this?
Sure.
Okay. So today's game, I watched the last 5 minutes of the game. I thought the Raptors had the control of the game in the third quarter. I was kind of periodically checking stats because they started this game at 5:30. I don't quite know what you're doing making this game a 5:30 game. Maybe there's a good reason. I can't imagine that there was, but they started the game at 5:30. I didn't get to watch it. I had a cross-country meet tonight, so I didn't get to watch the first half. And then by the time I got home, I hadn't been home all day, so I didn't really get to watch anything until, you know, I think 8 o'clock when it was like the last 5 minutes of the game. So obviously I saw that the Celtics won. So I thought I would bring back a favorite segment from the end of last season, Mike. Do you remember what that segment was?
Refresh my memory.
The Magic Johnson tweets about...
Oh, Magic came out with something.
Oh yeah, here we go.
All right, I'm ready.
Tatum's supporting cast is excellent. Marcus Smart hit 6 threes, and Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown added 17 and 16 points respectively. At the end of the day, the Celtics are a more explosive team than the Raptors! Exclamation point.
All right. Well, he at least had. There's some analysis there that they're a more explosive team. It wasn't just completely him reading the box score.
Yeah, yeah.
Way to go, Magic.
So,
I'll give you my Magic quote from this series. I think what it comes down to for me here in this series is that Tatum's the best player in the series, and I don't think Siakam is clearly overmatched. I mean, we're seeing it. I've been telling you this all season that Siakam as your number one option in the playoffs is overmatched. He's just
now,
not.
Can
that's
I,
just
can
not
I ask you
kind
a question?
Of,
did you sure. seriously look up Magic Johnson's tweet, or did you just say that?
Did I just say what? That it was a box score tweet?
Jason Tatum. No, the Jason Tatum is the best player because the tweet before.
See, I told you I was trying to channel Magic and I didn't even look it up.
I
want to
read the whole tweet, but it's pretty close.
All right, read it.
Jason Tatum has been the best player on the floor in this series. In the Boston-Toronto series, scoring 34 points tonight as the Celtics take a 2-0 lead. So I just thought it was hilarious that the first thing you said was, my Magic Johnson tweet is Tatum is the best player on the floor in the series.
See, I told you. Me and Magic are thinking the same. We're thinking along the same lines. So I could only envision. I could only envision what Magic would be saying. And so that's what I tried to echo. But I think to me, even more so than Tatum, I really think it's about Siakam. And look, Siakam's a really good player. He proved it last year. He proved it this year during the regular season. I just don't think when push comes to shove that he's good enough to be the number one option on a team that's going to make the conference finals or the finals. I just don't. I don't think he's that kind of player. And there are other guys are limited in some way. Like Van Vliet, that guy's tough as all get out, but he's maybe 6'1", and he's not explosive, and he's going to struggle against some teams. Lowry, again, he's good, but Lowry's not going to carry you offensively through a series. The guy who stood out to me like a sore thumb tonight that just looked, I thought, like a statue was Marc Gasol. I don't know if he even played in the last 5 minutes while you were watching, but watching him.
That's when he tripped. What's his name? Marcus Smart got a rebound or something, and he tripped him.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. But Gasol just looks like a guy who can't even bend his legs anymore. I mean, you know what he reminded me of, honestly, was the last year of Arvydas Sabonis in Portland, where he just was running around totally straight up and down. And again, Gasol's still very, very skilled, just like Sabonis was back then. But he just doesn't look very mobile, and he doesn't look like he's able to do a whole lot. He's not certainly adding what he was able to add to that team last year. And I just think when you bump everybody up one spot in the pecking order, when you take Kawhi out of that team, it's just, they're just not as good. And I think they're going to, this series, I mean, Nick Nurse is a good coach, and I think the Raptors have some good players, but I don't know if it's going to be a sweep, but I think Boston's going to, maybe Toronto gets a game, but I think Boston, I said originally Boston in seven, because I think we both said it was going to be a 7-game series, and you had the Raptors, I think I had the Celtics, but I don't think it's, based on what we've seen in these first two games, I'm not sure it goes seven.
Okay. I have to go back really quickly because I just saw a tweet that I wanted to share with you, Mike.
Okay.
Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray combined to score 475 points in this series. That is the most combined points by opposing players in a series in NBA playoff history. The previous record was held by who? From the 1969 NBA Finals. I gave you that. That's my little hint. 1969 NBA Finals. What two players combined for the most points in a series?
Well, 69, that, man, was that the, okay, so I got asked, was that the last year Boston won the title, or was that the year that Wilt won his first one?
I don't know who won the finals. I just saw the tweet.
Oh, you haven't even gone there. I didn't go that far down the rabbit hole. You don't know who the team. You don't know who the teams are. You just.
I know the players, but I don't want to tell you. Hold on, I'm gonna look.
All right.
So I will tell you that Boston won it in Game 7.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought that was Russell's last title. So that's strange that somebody would have scored that many points for the Celtics. I mean, clearly, obviously, it's not Russell. And, man, I don't... John Havlicek?
John Havlicek?
Is that right?
Yeah, John Havlicek, yep.
Okay, all right, so I'm halfway there. So who would have been representing the other conference?
I told you who it was.
Wilt?
No, it's the Lakers. It's the Lakers.
Jerry West.
Jerry West is the correct answer. Ding, ding, ding. There you go, Mike.
Winner. All right. Okay. All right. So I didn't do too bad
That's pretty amazing, though. Since 1969, you think of all these years we've had, you know, I'm
impressed. I would not have guessed 1969 as
that's
the
why
year
I gave it to you, because I figured that you were going to go something like more recent.
I don't know what I might have thought. I guess because it's a 7-game series, I was going to say maybe the Barkley Jordan Finals, Phoenix against Chicago, where both of those guys.
What about Malone?
You wouldn't have thought
Malone Jordan in that last.
I don't think Malone ever had. He wasn't a guy who was putting up 40 against the Bulls in those final games.
You're right.
I mean, he was getting his 29 or 30, but he wasn't. he wasn't going crazy.
Yeah, so, but I saw that and I figured that was a good little piece of trivia I throw at you, Mike.
That was some good trivia.
Okay, so then the other Eastern Conference series, are you more worried about your Bucks now? Because I'm telling you right now, I said it back when the playoffs started that I thought that the Heat could match up with the Bucks. I don't know that the Heat's gonna win the series. I want to be clear here. I picked the Bucks, but
I don't know if I'm gonna sit here and say after. The same thing I said before or after game one of the Magic series.
Oh, but you can't equate the Heat and the Magic together, right?
No, I'm not. But I'm just saying. But here's what I'm saying.
They have one thing in common. They're in the state of Florida.
Okay. But here's what I'm trying to get at is that the things that when you watch the Bucks play poorly and get beat, there's a theme that goes through it. It doesn't matter if they're getting beat by the Magic or they're getting beat by Miami, or they're getting beat by, if you remember the Sixers game back on Christmas Day, all these games look the same. And they look the same in that offensively for the Bucks, teams keep Giannis out of the paint and they limit the amount of layups and dunks that he gets. And so he tries to go in there and there's so many bodies, there's just nowhere for him to go. And then when he kicks it out, guys don't make shots or don't make enough shots in order to combat the strategy that their opponent is using. And then I see Giannis get a little bit frustrated because he can't get all the way to the rim because there's just so many people in there. And then he doesn't, and this is something that we've talked about, and as great as he is, he doesn't have that Kawhi, I can just pull up and score from anywhere on the floor. He's either shooting a standstill three or he's going all the way to the rim. And there really is no in between. He's developed a little bit in the post where he can kind of shoot that little turnaround jumper, but it's certainly not a weapon that is very feared by any other teams. They love seeing him take that shot. So I worry about Giannis and the Bucks in a close game in the last 4 minutes. I think if their odds of blowing people out, I think are probably better than any other team in the bubble. But I'm not sure in a close game that I'm going to feel too good about any game that's within 5 points the last 4 minutes. I'm not going to feel super confident about what the Bucks are going to do because their best player, as great as he is, and as much as I love how he plays, he just doesn't have that ability to create shots out of nothing. He just doesn't. And his teammates have got to knock stuff down. And when they don't, it's trouble. And then the other thing that's killing him, and I used to talk about it with LeBron, and LeBron never was quite at this level, but you know, he was 4-for-12 from the line yesterday. And you know, if he's an 85% free throw shooter and he makes 10 out of 12, you put 6 more points on the board, and you put him on the board during the game flow, it's a different game. And he's got to make free throws. I mean, if he's going to shoot 50% from the line, they're not winning. I don't care because teams are just going to keep following him more and more and more if he's not going to make free throws.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. I'm interested to see what happens, but I'm giving the Heat a chance. I'm giving them a chance. I still want to stick with the Bucks right now. I'm going to be cautious. I'm not going to have a hot take express here and immediately jump ship. But I will tell you this, Mike. Here's my prediction.
Okay.
If the Heat win tomorrow, they are winning the series.
I mean, that's fair. They go up 2-0. Bucks got to win 4 out of 5.
They have one thing that the Milwaukee Bucks don't have, Mike.
Jay Crowder?
They have a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly make an argument. I mean, clearly we know Spoelstra's a good coach. I mean, he's taken lots of different iterations of the Miami Heat and helped them to be successful.
I mean, let's be honest. Last year, the Miami Heat were not supposed to be in the playoffs, okay? They were not. They were supposed to be terrible. And they made the playoffs, right, last year? They made the playoffs last year?
I believe so.
Okay. the year after LeBron left. They made the playoffs, and that team was terrible. Like, I know that they're not the San Antonio Spurs here, but Spoelstra is a good coach, and I still remember back in 2012 when people wanted him to be fired with LeBron. And I'll be honest, I used to think that Eric Spoelstra reminded me of Napoleon Bonaparte. Okay? But I will tell you, I truly believe that Eric Spoelstra is a top five coach in this league, Mike. I agree with you.
I'm not gonna disagree with you.
I think
Coach Budenholzer, on the other hand,
is a bottom five. Well,
no, let's not go there. Let's not say that because from a regular season standpoint, I don't think there's any doubt that what he did in Atlanta and what he's done in Milwaukee have been good coaching jobs. I mean, he's done a really good job. The difference is that you're in the playoffs, it seems like he's been slow in most cases to make the kind of adjustments that it seems that other more accomplished better playoff coaches seem to make. And that was the worry last year when he matched up against Nick Nurse, and it seems like it's going to be the worry in this series with Spoelstra. Now, you're limited. There's not much you can do. You can't conjure Giannis's mid-range game out of nowhere and say, hey, go get us a bucket. So you got to figure something out. And, you know, you look at this game and you look at the totality. I was just going through and looking at the stats. Like, the Bucks shot 45% from three, and they made 16 threes. So it's not like they shot poorly. They shot poorly from the line. Again, most of that was Giannis, 14 of 26. But we also have to remember that they were without Bledsoe, and who knows what his hamstring is going to be moving forward. But they clearly need him. I mean, George Hill's a good player, but you don't want George Hill playing 36 minutes. And Bledsoe in the regular season is, I mean, he's clearly one of your four best players. And depending on how you want to rank, break down him or Brook Lopez, who's more important to that team. So to be without him, there's lots of things for the Bucks that you can say, you know, it's a one-game aberration. But I think what always worries me when I see a game like this is just that the formula is out there for what you have to do to beat Milwaukee. Now, that doesn't mean that every team can execute it, and I doubt Giannis is going to be held to 18 in the next game. But you got to be worried. They don't look like you would want a championship team to look like. And yet, I will say that if you look at every one of these teams that's left, they all have flaws. There's no perfect team. So depending on matchups, depending on night to night, who performs and who doesn't, I mean, I think the title race, you could make a case for multiple teams
getting there.
And if things break right, that they could win. I think there are teams besides the Lakers, Bucks, and Clippers that, like, I think the Celtics could win. I think the Celtics could win the title if things were to break.
Oh God, I love Simmons, but do you know how insufferable that would be for their...
Well, I don't think they're going to. I'm just saying I think there's a world where that could happen. But
he would be going, and we did it without Hayward. Ah.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Did it without all our draft picks. Anyway.
Yeah, I think that there's only one team we talked about this. I think we talked about it this morning.
Yeah. It all runs together, man.
It all runs together. When I called you a dead man's curve, I feel
That's
like
right.
I said, I think there's only one team that I don't think could win the title, and it wasn't Houston. I still think Houston could have the path to be there. I don't think they're going to, but I think they could. I don't think the Thunder has a chance because I don't think that, I don't think they would get through the Lake. They have any chance of getting through the Lakers. B, if they got through the Lakers somehow, I don't think there's any way they could get through the Clippers after that. And then C, if they got through the Clippers, I don't think they could get through any of the team. Well, I mean, I guess the case could be made if they get through the Lakers and the Clippers, they could get through the Bucks too. But right. I don't see that happening. So that was the only team that's left in this whole thing that I don't think has a chance at winning the championship. Although I will say, you know, this goes back to almost a year ago, Mike, when we started to do our podcast where we were interviewing all the teams. We started to do our team podcast. I think it was about a year ago, right? I mean, we thought that this season was wide open. We thought, you know, there's countless teams that could come out on top, and here we are in the playoffs, and, you know, you get to the second round and you start thinking, oh, there's really like three teams that are going to win. Like you said, the Lakers, the Bucks, and the Clippers. But I legitimately think that, you know, there's six or seven teams that have a shot at this if things go their way.
Yeah, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. Yeah. And I think that the next round of series should be competitive, but Maybe the favorites will surprise us and take care of business.
Can you remember a first round that was as competitive as this first round this year, or no? Like,
I always feel like the first round. Honestly, the first round is always my favorite round, just because I like seeing all the matchups and just because there's so many games.
I just feel like there's a lot.
It's been fun. It's been fun to get when you get two game sevens. To get two game sevens in the first round is fun. And that series between Denver and Utah was a fun series. And then just kind of the intrigue between Oklahoma City and Houston, just the personalities on those two teams and the interconnection between them has made it interesting. And I always think I like watching the Rockets self combust. So I'm going to really enjoy tomorrow night's game. I'm going to really enjoy that one.
All right. We have to say one more thing at the end of the podcast, Mike.
Okay,
Uncle Cliffy, your parting shot to Cliff Robinson. Do you have anything you'd like to say about Cliff Robinson he passed away?
We lost three huge figures in the game of basketball from the playing standpoint. Cliff Robinson was a guy who, 6'11", played, I don't know how many years he played, 16 years maybe in the league. And I read somewhere where he scored 19,000 points in his career and was probably a player who was here before his time. And if he played in today's game, he'd have been shooting threes. He'd have been a stretch five. He'd have been even more effective. He would have been a guy who every team would have wanted to have Cliff Robinson on their team. By all accounts, things that we've read since he passed away was that he was a beloved teammate and a great guy. And you look back on him and his career, and it was certainly one that he should be proud of, and certainly one that I think he lived up to what his potential was when he came out of UConn. But I think if he was in today's game, he would have been even more effective. And then obviously the passing of former Arizona coach Lute Olson, and we know the impact that he had on the game. And then John Thompson, who not only had an effect on the world of college basketball, but also had an impact societally and fighting for the rights of the African-American athlete, and was always a champion of the underdog. And although I was never a fan of Georgetown and never really necessarily a fan of John Thompson in the moment, just because I didn't like the Hoyas, but certainly had respect for what he was able to do. And then looking back on what he's done over the course of his career and the course of his life and the things that he's had to overcome and the impact that he's had on the people that he's come into touch with in his life, clearly just a giant in the game of basketball. So all three of those guys to have passed away in one weekend, it was kind of a rough weekend in a lot of ways for the game of basketball, with the player strike and trying to make an impact there, and then losing three, you know, iconic figures in the game of basketball in one weekend was kind of tough.
Yeah. So obviously, like, I remember Cliff playing a little bit,
probably vaguely, yeah,
vaguely in Portland. And then I know that he kind of was a bit of a traveler after that. But do you know what I remember him playing the most?
No.
He played a season of Survivor, Mike.
Yeah, you're right.
And when I saw he passed away, like, I thought of him as a basketball player, but then I was like, he was on Survivor, right? So then I ended up going back and looking up, and I watched the first three episodes from his season, and I didn't watch any more than that. But it's weird because, you know, maybe I would have gone back and watched one of his best NBA games, but I went back and watched, and just watching him as a what is he? He's like, was he six, a 6'10 guy living on an island playing Survivor. He obviously stuck out like a sore thumb. But I thought it was pretty cool. Just reminiscing of him being on Survivor and a little different take on it, I guess. But, you know, I wasn't really Ludos, and I guess he was. I mean, I know he was coaching when I was a kid, but before my time.
Yeah.
And yeah. Thompson, the same thing. Like, obviously, I knew he was the coach of Ewing and stuff and all that, but I don't really know him that well. So
it was a different. I mean, when I think of John Thompson, you think of that era of college basketball and how important Big Monday was in the Big East, and just the coaches that were there in the Big East at that time, with Lou Carnesecca at St. John's and Jim Boeheim, of course, who's still at Syracuse, and Rolly Massimino at Villanova, and just the battles that these guys would have night in and night out, and with some of the biggest stars in college basketball. And it was just, John Thompson was an iconic figure in the moment back in the, whatever, the mid to late 80s, early 90s. And then just, again, his value, his life transcended the game of basketball with the impact that he was able to have on the young people that he coached. And you could see it when he passed away, the number of guys that came out and had things to say about him. And I know, I think I retweeted one of the things that Allen Iverson said. I don't remember the quote off the top of my head, but basically just saying that Coach Thompson saved his life and really helped him to turn things around. And, you know, that's, you know, we talk about on, not necessarily always on the NBA pods, but certainly on our coaching podcast, we talk about what coaching's all about. And it's certainly about basketball, but it's also about having an impact on the people that you coach. And, you know, John Thompson, and I'm sure Lute Olson, and I'm sure Cliff Robinson as a teammate had an impact on the people around them. And that, to me, again, is really what, that's really what the game and coaching and sports is all about.
Yep. And sad to see them go, but I'm excited to see what happens left in the playoffs. And I'm really excited to see, and but we thank those guys for what a wonderful impact they made on the game. You know, I think obviously the two coaches made a huge impact, and obviously Cliff made an impact as well. But it's sad for them to lose them, but you know, I guess things come in three, so hopefully we lose no one else, right, Mike?
Hopefully not. Hopefully not. It's been a tough year all the way around for all of us in so many ways. And hopefully that we're going to get through this and make it. What are your odds? What are the odds?
I'm staying at 90, although I was you know, a little worried last week that, because I said at the end, the only thing that I could see holding this back was the social injustice piece. And then the next day we went on strike.
You must add some inside information.
I had no inside information. It was just a feeling in my bones. I'm going to stick at 90%. I think at this point, the players are going to see this through. It would take something catastrophic. Oh, gosh. Why am I saying it, Mike? What am I?
Yeah, please don't come out. Please don't come out with it would take something catastrophic. Let's not give any suggestions. I'm going to stick. I'll stick at 91%. I'll Price is Right you again. Bob Barker would be proud of me that I'm going 1% above your answer. I do think it's going to happen.
You get your pet spayed or neutered?
That's right. Exactly. Absolutely. And I'm ready for the showcase showdown tomorrow night with the Houston Rockets. I'm ready to see James Harden walk off the floor with nothing in his pockets and some other guy get the camper and the houseboat or whatever it is that they get in those packages. So I don't expect
banana boat?
You get your complimentary Bob Barker banana boat when you win on The Price is Right. Well, look, I think Houston's done tomorrow night. I think all the other series, hopefully Toronto can come back and get game three and at least make that into an interesting series. I think Bucks Heat is going to be a battle all the way through. And I'm curious to see that whoever does move on, I think it's going to be Oklahoma City, but whoever ends up playing the Lakers and then that Clippers Denver series. Denver's just a fun team, I think, to play because they're so offensive minded and Jokic and Murray are dynamic as they proved in this series. So I think that'll be a fun series. I don't know that Denver can win it, but I don't think it's going to be easy. I think it'll be similar to the Mavericks series in that you're going to have some fun, entertaining games and moments. I think eventually the Clippers move on. So I think your conference finals are going to be Milwaukee, Boston, and the Clippers and the Lakers. And then we'll see what happens
from there. Boston Lakers finals? Question mark?
Maybe. I mean, it's possible. I still think the Bucks are going to figure out a way to get it done, but I, again, all these teams are flawed, and there's not, you're not looking at a Golden State juggernaut that, you know, where you play these teams, you say, oh, there's no way they can get beat. Any of these teams can get beat, and that's what makes it fun this year, is that the inevitability of the last 5 years that Golden State was going to be there at the end, and barring injury, they were going to win it. This has a lot more intrigue, and it's been a lot more fun to kind of watch and try to think about what's going to happen. So,
wait, are you saying the Cavs only won the championship in 2016 because of injury?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there was little intrigue, and there was little intrigue in the East. I mean, you knew it was going to be the Cavs Warriors for four straight years. I mean, we knew that was what was going to happen.
No,
so,
you said barring injury, the Warriors were going to win the finals in 2016.
Nobody thought we were winning. Barring a nut punch, I don't think we win that. I don't think we win that series. I think the nut punch spurs us on to victory. And then clearly there was a lot of great performances after that. But if that doesn't happen, I don't think that's the title of the episode tonight.
Barring a nut. Because didn't someone else get punched in the nuts a few days ago?
Yeah, PJ Tucker, man. Your boy Schroeder.
That's a perfect name for our episode, and no one will know why that's the name until they get to the end of the episode.
That could be true. Yeah, it'll be. We'll have to pull that. Maybe we pull that one out as the headliner clip. I don't know. But at any rate,
we've been talking for an hour, 10 minutes. Okay,
that was Schroeder. That was Schroeder going after PJ Tucker. It's funny because I saw that play. I didn't see the play live, and that must have been right when I was turning that game on, and so I only saw like the end. So I never saw the angle where you could clearly see where he punched him. I was like, why is Schroeder getting thrown out? It doesn't make any sense. I'm like, he just ran into the pick. I couldn't figure it out. And then eventually I went back and watched it. I'm like, oh, I see why he got thrown out. Makes sense. Makes a lot more sense to me now. So anyway, well, that's a fun way to wrap up this episode. We've touched on a ton of different things. It's been a very fun evening. We are now approaching 1 a.m. here in Cleveland, Ohio on Wednesday morning. So I think we're going to leave it there. And if any really exciting news breaks or there's a game that requires us to jump back on, maybe we'll do a quickie podcast, or maybe we won't. Just will depend on our family schedules and situations. But at the very least, you will hear us back on Friday with Jonathan Sippis from the University of Wisconsin women's basketball team, the head coach. So that'll be the next episode on Friday. And who knows, maybe we'll be back with an NBA episode in the meantime before next Tuesday.
We might be back tomorrow night when the Houston Rockets win, Mike.
Oh, man. And we might have to do the emergency. James Harden scored 60 and had a triple-double to lead the Rockets past the Oklahoma City Thunder. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just
I promise you, Rockets fans, if James Harden gets a triple-double and scores more than 35 and the Rockets win, I promise you a podcast tomorrow to come on and eat crow. But it's not happening, so we'll see you next Tuesday. All right, thanks everybody for listening. We really appreciate it, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Brought to you by Head Start Basketball.